Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so happy to be here this morning with all of you. I have a great show planned. Mitchell Cohen and Robin Falk Esser will be my guests today. They are contributors, and Mitchell is the editor to the new book, The Fight Against Monsanto's Roundup, The Politics of Pesticides. And you know this is a topic very close to my heart, so I'm really excited to have them on and to talk about everything that they have discovered and share that information with all of you. And I'll be telling you more about them when they come on. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in the news and some things that you can take action with. You know, it's so important right now with the coronavirus going on and the fear that everybody has about this new virus, that we all just realize that the best protection we all have against everything is to keep our immune system strong. And this past week, I actually had the privilege of going into the health classes at Glen Cove Public Schools, trying to take what I'm doing out of the cafeteria and bring a little education into the situation. So in the classrooms, I showed this film called The True Cost of Food, which was just an awesome short 15 minutes, that's it, 15-minute animated video, perfect for the high schoolers, enough information that they could absorb, but not too long. 15 minutes of bam, 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 one issue after the next issue after the next issue with the true cost of food. If cheap food had to pay for the cleanup of the toxic waste, had to pay for the health problems that everybody has due to it, had to pay to clean up the air, pay to clean up the water, this cheap food would no longer be cheap. And all of a sudden, organic food would be cheaper. So this was just a great film to show them, and it really, you know, made me bring again the connections that our food has to our bodies and our immune system full circle. And so with the viruses going around and all the, you know, health issues and the fear that people have, my takeaway was the fear certainly does not help. What we all need to do is just take responsibility for keeping our bodies as healthy as possible. And that means eating whole foods, whole plant-based foods. If you choose to eat meat or fish or any other animal protein, make sure it is sourced in a responsible way, not only for the health of your body, because if you're eating industrial-produced meat, it's going to have the hormones, the antibiotics, the GMOs, all that stuff in there. And when you eat it, if the animal ate it and you eat the animal, it's now in you. But it's also contributing to global warming. The greenhouse gas emissions and the global footprint of industrial agriculture is huge, more than all of the cars. And so we'll get into that again, I'm sure, later in our discussion. But it's just empowering, actually, to know that you can take control and make wise choices and help yourself stay healthy and keep your immune system up. Another thing I love, you know, I do this tincture. It's Zand formula of Ensure, it's called, Z-A-N-D. And Ensure, it's a tincture of echinacea and golden seal. And I don't take it all the time prophylactically, but if I ever feel like I'm getting a little bit of a scratchy throat or anything, I just take a couple dropperfuls of that straight into my mouth, and I'm telling you, it's magic. So that's something I wanted to share with you. The Long Island CSA Fair is coming back to Long Island on March 21st, and community-supported agriculture, which is what CSA stands for, is probably the best way for you to be able to source local organic vegetables in season. Every week you will get a basket full or a box full of that week's harvested vegetables at a very reasonable price. And the beauty of it is you actually get to partner with the farm. You become a shareholder in the farm. You purchase this share up front at the beginning of the season when the farmer really needs the financial support. And then every week throughout the season you get a box of freshly harvested vegetables. And every CSA is a little different. Some CSAs offer sustainably raised meat choices, fresh fish, flowers, eggs, cheese, bread, so many different options. So every CSA is different. Some CSAs you have to pick up at the farm. Some CSAs have different drop-off points. You need to find a convenient time and a convenient drop-off point that's easy for you, or if going to the farm is easy for you. So basically, the beauty of this CSA fair is over 20 farms will be at our CSA fair, and they are all organic farmers, not necessarily all certified, but all practicing organic methods. And so it's wonderful to have everybody under one roof where you can really shop around, meet the different farmers, find out where their farm is, find out where their drop-off points are, find out if they have those extra add-ons that you might be interested in, and then make the best choice. And also, you know, look at the different costs involved in each share. Some are only sell full shares, and if you're a family of one or two, a full share might be too much. So some offer half shares. Some offer pickups every other week. So there's really so many different options, and it's really hard to do it all over the phone. So having everybody under one roof is really great. So come out to the CSA Fair, which will be on March 21st. At the Sisters of St. Joseph in Brentwood, and that's building number 2. And all of these events that I talk about are listed on my website, which is a great resource at ieatgreen.com. You can find events going on in New York and the Long Island metropolitan area, like New Jersey, Connecticut, and then even great conferences that are happening in different parts of the country. I will talk about those in case this is really your passion and you're willing to travel to go. Or you might be in that part of the country. So anyway, the CSA fair is coming, and that's a wonderful thing. And then when I was talking about our immune system, one of the things I put into my newsletter this week that you can find on my blog under Take Action is a whole list of resources that I use to help me make informed choices. And I recommend you all checking it out. You know, I list organizations like the Environmental Working Group. They have consumer guides on everything from sunscreen, which, believe it or not, as you all know, our skin is our largest organ, and so when you put chemical sunscreen on, you're absorbing that, and people glob it on their children and just don't even think about it. So, you know, they have consumer guides on best sunscreen, pesticides and produce, how to avoid GMOs, a seafood guide, and then, of course, they have the famous Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen lists. The Clean 15 are the most least toxic non-organic vegetables that you can buy, and then the Dirty Dozen are the ones that are most toxic that you really want to buy organic. And these are important to know because so many people, most people, you know, are watching their dollars and can't afford to buy everything organic. I hear this all the time, and so this is a way to make informed choices. If you don't buy everything organic, at least you avoid the ones that are most toxic and purchase organic of those, and the ones that are cleaner, you don't have to worry about as much. The Cornucopia Institute is another one that has great lists. They have scorecards, and they really rate everything from organic eggs to poultry to plant-based beverages. You know, we all know that, you know, all organic eggs are not created equal. You know, there's industrialized organic these days. As the big corporations are buying up the small producers, what at one time really was organic with good animal husbandry is no longer the reality. And, you know, they may say that the chickens have access to the outdoors, but can they get there? The little door might be all the way at the other end of the barn, and they can't get there. So all organic is not the same. So anyway, Cornucopia Institute has a great website with lots of wonderful scorecards for you to check out. And then the list goes on. Community Solidarity is a nonprofit organization that actually distributes free organic groceries, predominantly mostly organic and mostly plant-based, and it's just amazing. And they have distribution sites throughout Long Island and Brooklyn, and they give out free, delicious vegetables. And so, again, you can come and volunteer. You can come get vegetables, So they're another resource. But check out the list. The list goes on and on, but I don't want to take the time to go over them all now. But it's something you should definitely check out. A couple other things going on in the area that you may want to know about. There's a new nonprofit organization here on Long Island called Transition Town Port Washington, and they are working to raise awareness in their local town about pesticides and the environment and things we can all do to become active citizens. The first one, of course, is to vote. And I don't know how many of you got to see the Democratic primary, Democratic debate last night. It was difficult to watch as they were fighting up there on stage, but, you know, it's really interesting to hear what they all have to say, and it will be interesting to see how it all plays out. I don't want to get into politics here, but it's interesting to watch, and I really do hope that they all coalesce around one candidate at some point and create a strong opposition to our current president. Anyway, Transition Town Port Washington is leading up to Earth Day, are having three different film screenings. One is Paris to Pittsburgh, and that's all about the Paris Agreement and environmental issues that you want to know about. The next one is Just Eat It. It's a food waste story. And then the last one is actually on Earth Day, and that is March 22nd. What is that film? I don't know. You'll have to find it on my website. Sorry about that. But there's three of them. The first one is on February 28th coming up, then March 20th, and then the other one is on Earth Day. Also, the Peconic Land Trust has a great lecture series. The first one is happening March 1st. It's a four-part series. Check out the Peconic Land Trust. They're really great, and this lecture series is also really worthwhile. I mentioned the CSA Fair coming up. Food and Water Watch, another nonprofit that I am very close to that does great work. They're having their 15th anniversary benefit gala on March 24th. If you can come to that, that would be wonderful. And Slow Food East End is having their big thing on March 29th. And of course, next week, on Tuesday night, Slow Food North Shore is having their dinner at Osteria Liana in Oyster Bay. That's a winter soiree on Tuesday, February 25th. Tickets are $60 for Slow Food members and $70 for non-members. And it is an unbelievable family-style meal being served. Eight different appetizers to start with, then five different pastas. Some are gluten-free. Many of them, or most of them, can be dairy-free. Unbelievable menu. We have wine that's being donated from Macari Vineyards. They're biodynamic red and white wines, and local beer from Oyster Bay Brewery. So all included, including tax and tip. Anyway, it's going to be a really fun night, so if you come join us for that, it would be wonderful. And now I'd like to share with you my recipe of the week before my guests come on. I made a vegetable lasagna with a cashew and tofu ricotta. And as you can probably tell, as most of my recipes are vegan and plant-based, that's how I mostly eat. It's not to say that I won't on occasion eat fish or dairy, but for the most part, I'm eating plant-based, and I just feel like it is the best choice for my health and the planet. So for this vegetable lasagna, you want to preheat your oven to 350. I bought gluten-free rice lasagna noodles. DeBoles makes really great gluten-free rice noodles, or you can buy whatever lasagna noodle you like. You do not need to cook the lasagna noodles first because they will cook in the casserole, in the sauce, and that's one of the keys to making this lasagna really delicious and, you know, when it just bakes in the tomato sauce, it takes on all that flavor. So I used a pound of the Mayoko cashew mozzarella cheese to put on top, and that's really just a visual thing. If you don't want to use that, you can leave that off, but it does add to the look. The cashew ricotta cheese, I soaked one cup of cashews for 2 hours. You can soak them for more if you'd like. 1 tablespoon of nutritional yeast. That's not the yeast that rises bread. It's good-tasting nutritional yeast flakes that I use a lot in my cooking, and it helps make sauces creamy and gives a little bit of a cheesy flavor. 1 teaspoon of chopped garlic, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon white pepper, and 1 cup of water. For the tofu filling, you need 1 block of firm tofu, 1/2 cup of vegan pesto, or you can just use a bunch of basil if you don't have the pesto, 1 cup of coconut milk and 4 cloves of garlic, and 1 tablespoon of nutritional yeast. For the spinach sauté, you're going to use 2 pounds package of frozen chopped spinach, or you can just use 2 pounds of fresh spinach, organic, and cook that down. And then after you cook it down, you want to squeeze all the water out of the spinach before you use it. And I sautéed that with 1 tablespoon of chopped garlic. For the mushroom sauté, I used 1 8-ounce box of baby Bella mushrooms. In hindsight, I would probably go to 2 boxes. 1 pound of baby bells would even be better. But 1 tablespoon of chopped garlic, 2 tablespoons red wine, and 1 tablespoon of tamari. And for the tomato sauce, I used olive oil, minced garlic, 1 onion, 1 yellow or orange organic pepper diced, 1/4 cup of white wine, 2 jars of organic marinara sauce, 1 can of diced fire-roasted tomatoes, 1/2 cup of chopped parsley, and that's a lot of chopped parsley. If you don't want to use so much, you can lighten up on that, and 1 tablespoon of dried oregano. And so I started by making the sauce. I sautéed the onion, garlic, and peppers in olive oil in a large stock pot, and when those were soft, I added the white wine, cooked that down for a few minutes, and then added the marinara sauce, the can of diced tomatoes, and 1/4 cup of the chopped parsley. And let that cook for a while. And while that's cooking, you can drain the cashews and pulse them in a food processor with 1 cup of water, the nutritional yeast, the garlic, the salt and pepper. And just pulse that a bunch and then let it run for a while until it's really smooth. Taste it, and you can adjust the salt and pepper to your liking. You can also adjust the garlic if you want it more garlicky. Then scrape out the cashew ricotta and put that in a bowl and set that aside. And then using the same bowl, you don't have to wash it out, you can put in the cake of tofu, the coconut milk, the garlic, and the pesto, and you're going to do the same thing. Pulse that until very smooth. And the reason I use 2 different ricottas, you could certainly just double up on one of them and not use 2 if you want to simplify this, but I had the cashews going, and I wanted the top layer of the ricotta to just be white, and the tofu ricotta has a green tint to it because I mix in the pesto. So that's more buried in the bottom, and the white one was up on the top, which just looked better. But anyway, so I did the same thing with the tofu ricotta and made that. Then I covered the bottom of a cast iron pan with olive oil, and I sauteed the mushrooms until they started to sweat. I added the garlic and continued cooking that for 5 minutes until all of the liquid evaporated. Then I put in just a little red wine and let that absorb with the mushrooms, and then seared it with a splash of tamari. And that just locks in a saltiness. And the mushrooms were actually a little crispy, and that's how I like them, because that adds texture to the dish and really a burst of flavor when you bite into it when you're eating the lasagna. So then you can remove that from the pan, defrost the spinach in the hot water and drain that out. Squeeze all the water out of that. Cover the bottom of the cast iron pan with some olive oil again and saute the spinach with the garlic for a few minutes. Add the salt and pepper to taste, and that's it. If you'd like, you can also saute an onion in with the garlic. In with the spinach, and that just will add to it as well. And then to assemble the lasagna, you're going to use a deep lasagna pan because you have many layers here. You're going to put some of the tomato sauce on the bottom of the pan. Add a single layer of the dry lasagna noodles right out of the box. Spread 1/2 of the tofu ricotta filling over the noodles. Put in 1/2 of the spinach mixture and 1/2 of the mushroom mixture over the tofu ricotta. Then spread a thin layer of the tomato sauce. Repeat with another layer of noodles, the remaining tofu ricotta, the remaining spinach, and the remaining mushrooms. Add another layer of sauce. Cover with a final layer of noodles, the cashew ricotta this time, and then more sauce. Cover that with aluminum foil and bake that for about 45 minutes. Then remove it from the oven, sprinkle the grated Mayoko mozzarella cheese on top, and bake it for another 10 minutes, uncovered, until the cheese is melted. And then you can garnish it with the remaining chopped parsley. And that's it. And it is so good, and it's really comfort food. You know, it takes a little bit of work. It's more of a weekend meal than a weekday meal, but it's really great. Just serve it with a fresh salad. We also had some sautéed broccoli rabe on the side, and it was just fantastic. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my two guests this week. Mitchell Cohn is a longtime green activist. He led the No Spray Coalition in New York City, which successfully sued the city government over its indiscriminate spraying of toxic pesticides. And in 1997, he organized a campaign to rid New York City public schools of milk from cows injected with genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. And in 2001, he actually ran for mayor of New York City as one of the Green Party candidates. He was editor of the national newspaper Green Politics, and of the New York State Green Party newspaper. Mitchell edited Red Balloon, which was the journal of the Red Boon Collective that he co-founded at SUNY Stony Brook, and chaired WBAI's radio local board. And Robin Falk Esser, she earned her PhD in physiology and biophysics at SUNY Stony Brook, and has published papers in journals such as Science, Nature, and Journal of Physiology, the Journal of General Physiology, and the Biophysical Journal. And she worked as a New York City high school science teacher for 30 years, teaching advanced placement, environmental science, AP bio, and chemistry, among other courses. And she was the recipient of the Siemens AP Science Award for excellence in teaching. And both of them are contributors to the book, The Fight Against Monsanto's Roundup, The Politics of Pesticides, and Mitchell actually edited the whole book. And so it's my pleasure to introduce both of them to you. Mitchell and Robin, are you with me?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, Robin.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you both for joining me today and for your work in raising the consciousness of people in the issue around Monsanto's Roundup and the politics that go into pesticides. And I actually thought before we start talking about the book, which I really want to get into, I thought maybe each of you could just share a little bit more about your history. How did you come to write this book? What was your inspiration behind writing this book and the work you're currently doing? So Mitchell, maybe you could go first.
Sure. Good morning, Long Island. Good morning, Bhavani. So I'm hungry listening to your recipes. I'm sitting here, oh, man, this sounds great.
Try it. It is really good.
Except for the salt part. I can't have salt, so you can leave that out. So
Okay.
So the book that I wrote, The Fight Against Monsanto's Roundup, The Politics of Pesticides, is different than a lot of other approaches to the question of, will it kill us if we eat it? How bad is it? Yes, it covers a lot of that, but it also looks at the relationship of genetically engineered food to the mass spraying of pesticides over those crops, and what are the political thoughts, ramifications, pushes that go into it to say, why are they doing this? You know, why are they all over the world, why are they planting genetically engineered crops everywhere and people resisting it everywhere? What does it do? Why are they, how does it feed into the current system that we have, the capitalist system as I see it in the U.S. and elsewhere? How is it a major source of value for that system such that there are all these investments in it? And then, of course, what is Monsanto's role? It's not only Monsanto, but Monsanto is the most visible.
And
I've been an anti-war activist for many, many years. I was at school at Stony Brook, as you mentioned. And the connection between environmental and war is still very major in my mind, and it's often left out of the environmental movement on the one hand and also the anti-war movement on the other. So I would be batting my head in the anti-war movement to find not environmental issues left off the agendas when they're totally integrated. And the other way, too, inside the environmental movement, they don't talk about war. So,
although
they are now, but finally, but it's totally, the connections are so tight, and it's the same corporations behind both. So I wanted to put some of that together as a way of putting this out for the environmental movement to take on the issue of war and corporations and corporate profits and go beyond just the personal approach of how is this bad for me personally.
Right.
Yes, it is, but I wanted to go beyond that and see how it fits into the larger frame of things.
Right. And Robin, what about for you? How did you come to be passionate about the issue of pesticides and the politics behind
it? I'm a longtime activist, going way back to the civil rights era and the war in Vietnam and anti-nuke and why glyphosate, which is one the active ingredient in Roundup, and why Roundup, the mixture, are toxic, exactly how that works, what exactly they do in the environment and the human body, and how the government agencies have supposedly, at least in the United States, declared it to still be safe. I wanted to reveal the inner workings of that process, so I could uniquely contribute in that regard.
Great. That's very helpful. And
I really have learned an incredible amount on this topic. Incredible. I mean, I'm just amazed at how toxic glyphosate really is. I just get amazed when every new study I read, and these are reputable studies that are done in peer-reviewed, very well-respected journals that are coming out one after the next, and I'm just amazed that everybody's got the stuff in their garage, their shed, their basement, and people just think the government agencies are protecting us. You know, they just can't believe that the government would allow this stuff to be sold. So it's just amazing.
Well, while we're on that topic, let's talk about Roundup. We know Roundup is the most widespread pesticide used on Earth. The active ingredient, as you just mentioned, is glyphosate. So how toxic is glyphosate? At the concentrations that are found in the environment, how toxic is it to humans, and what are some conditions or illnesses that have been directly tied to glyphosate?
Well, actually, glyphosate is very toxic at environmental concentrations.
Hey, Robin, could you speak up, please? I can barely hear you on this end.
You can't hear me?
Very low.
I can hear you fine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you hear me better now?
Can you hear her?
Very low. If you need to shout into the phone.
It's either you hear her or I hear her. Okay, keep going, Robin.
Okay, so firstly, you know, the Monsanto, which is the producer of, now owned by Bayer, is the producer of Roundup. And their claim was that glyphosate is safe to animals and humans because it only affects a specific biochemical pathway in plant cells. But actually, it also affects myriad of biochemical metabolic pathways in animal cells also. But that very pathway that they cited, that was the way that glyphosate worked, and it only worked on plant cells, is also present in bacteria. And it's present in the beneficial bacterial cells that inhabit our gut. So glyphosate kills off the bacteria in our gut. And, you know, humans are more bacteria than they are human. I don't know if many people are aware of that, but, you know, we're like 30 trillion cells make up an average human, and there's somewhere estimates between 39 and 100 trillion bacterial cells that are part of us on our skin, in our gut, mucous membranes and stuff like that, and that's being killed off. In addition, there's all sorts of neurological effects, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but autism with cognitive impairment has been directly linked to glyphosate. In an excellent article that was just published in March 23rd, 2019 in the British Medical Journal. It's also been linked to ADHD and could very well account for fibromyalgia and restless leg syndrome. Also, cancers, you've all heard about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, the court cases that are going on with that that have been directly linked to glyphosate. And it's an endocrine disruptor, which means it messes up the reproductive hormones. And there's many different reproductive problems that could be linked to glyphosate.
Yeah. So, well, I tell people, if you just look at the things that have infiltrated our society and become almost epidemic since the introduction of GMOs, we have the autism rate has gone up, the infertility rate has gone up, autoimmune diseases have gone up. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And, I just feel like we've just been guinea pigs for this big, test. And yet they're not even looking at the outcomes and making wise choices
right. After
seeing what's happening to us.
They're not even doing a test. They're just making profits, So
yeah.
It's not like we're even guinea pigs because they don't even care about the outcome. In my perspective, I just think they're trying to make profits and trying to skirt around any health and environmental issues. So,
What other components are in Roundup? Is it just straight glyphosate, are there other?
That's the irony of it, is that glyphosate is toxic in just those ways that I described. However, Roundup has additional ingredients that Monsanto, now Bayer, purposely put in. For example, POEAs, polyoxyethylenamines, were purposely put into the mix. They're in the mix all worldwide of, Roundup. And they are, on their own, 1,000 times more toxic than glyphosate, even. And they were put in with the express purpose of helping glyphosate get into the target plant cells, like the plant, the weeds that Roundup's trying to kill. So what POEAs do, they're surfactants. They are fat soluble. They dissolve in fat, so they get the glyphosate across the waxy covering of the leaf into the plant. And one of the big arguments that Monsanto would expound on that made Roundup safe was that it was safer than other pesticides, was that it was water soluble and therefore it could get washed away. But with these POEAs present in Roundup, the glyphosate complexes with the POEAs and is therefore no longer water soluble. It's not water soluble. It gets bioaccumulated inside the organism and biomagnified up the food chain. So it is not correct to say that it is water soluble. In addition, they also accidentally discovered in December 2017, due to researchers, I think the name of the group is Saralini, but I may be mispronouncing his name and I apologize in advance, accidentally discovered that arsenic was present in Roundup. And then they tested it over the whole, from samples from all over the world, and they found arsenic was always present in it. And arsenic, we know, is a significant poison and also was coincidentally, was a pesticide, used as a pesticide for many years. And so both arsenic and POEAs, among other things like heavy metals, are found in Roundup.
Well, a couple things just went into my head as you were talking. When they talk about pesticides being water soluble as a good thing, well, that's all the, when it's water soluble, it runs off into our water systems and is, killing the, creating dead zones and killing ocean life. It's also contaminating our water. And when you talk about arsenic, Many people don't realize that we now have arsenic in our rice. I mean, what I have to do to cook rice now, or what I encourage people to do, is, you know, to rinse the rice off, like scrub it under running water. That removes supposedly 50% of the rice. And then when you cook rice, boil it in a big pot of water, the same way you do pasta, and cook it till it's cooked, and then drain it. And that removes the remaining 90% of the arsenic, so that you'd left also with only 10% of arsenic in your rice.
Right. Also, basmati rice from India, white rice, basmati from India has the lowest arsenic content of any rice. And brown rice has much worse arsenic than white rice because it accumulates the arsenic.
Right. And like you said, from India, because the rice from California still has the arsenic.
And from the southern U.S. is the worst.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. What they've done to our system, it's really so sad.
Well, it's also that the arsenic is in the water supply all across the U.S., so along with other toxins. So it's not as if it's only in the rice, or only, although it is, and it's actually worse in brown rice than in white rice, which is horrible. And the government, my point in the book where I talk about this is that the government and Monsanto knew about this, and they just suppressed that evidence, which is why the juries in the cases for Dwayne Johnson and the other cases that have come up, the lawsuits against Monsanto, why the juries were furious at the companies when they learned that they knew about this and they suppressed it and they didn't let people know, which is why they say it outright at the juries, that why they awarded these huge these huge fines on the company, so that Dwayne Johnson got $750 million fine against Monsanto, although the judge reduced that later. And the next one that came up got $2 billion fine against Monsanto.
Thousands of lawsuits pending. But the question is, if glyphosate is so toxic and it's still being marketed worldwide, with some exceptions, why does our government and the EPA still refuse to acknowledge its toxicity? Even with these lawsuits, they're still not acknowledging that glyphosate is toxic. What's with that? One of you.
Yeah, it's, first, I'd like everybody to go to Home Depot and Target and other stores. They all carry Roundup still, and protest at the stores and get them to stop carrying it. There are these companies and shops in every community, and we could certainly have a nationwide and worldwide movement against this, as is happening elsewhere. The government keeps doing that because there was a trade-off with Monsanto and the other companies over many years. The government should have known this, right? They did know it because of Monsanto's lies about Agent Orange, and Dow Chemical's lies, and DuPont's lies about Agent Orange. But now what's happening is that we have Monsanto merging with Bayer. Bayer bought Monsanto for $64 billion, right? So now this is Bayer, our friendly aspirin company. And Syngenta merged with ChemChina to form another huge company that owns all the world's seeds. So Monsanto and Bayer, Syngenta and ChemChina, and DuPont, they formed a new group called Corteva. And between those three and perhaps they own about 70 or 80% of the world's seeds. And when you own the seeds and you force people to buy them from you year after year, because they're all genetically engineered, people have to buy and replant, not from seeds that they save, because they're not allowed to save seeds from genetically engineered, it's proprietary. You know, so the government hired, under Clinton and Gore, right, it's Democrats as well as Republicans, under Clinton and Gore, they put in place personnel to run the FDA who came from Monsanto. Then they left that administration, and they came back under the Bush administration. And they wrote all the laws pertaining to genetically engineered crops and pesticides. then they go and Roundup, and they go back again, and they go back and forth in this revolving door between government and industry that's horrible. And that's part of the reason why this continues with the government not doing anything about it. And in the Green New Deal, the Democrat version of it, it doesn't say anything about genetic engineering, opposition to it, no opposition to pesticides. The Green Party version does talk about that, but the one that's before Congress now that everybody's, you know, talking about doesn't say anything about that. It doesn't say anything about nuclear power plants. It doesn't, it's, you know, is this really green? It's, or is it,
right, it has some work to do.
The deal?
I really want to get into talking about that. First, though, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the Green New Deal, and also you mentioned Agent Orange in relation to Roundup, and I wanted to touch on that. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green and my guests, Mitchell Cohen and Robin Falk-Esser, contributors to the book, The Fight Against Monsanto's Roundup, The Politics of Pesticides. And we'll be right back.
It's the Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
Stand up, stand up. You've been sitting way too long.
Every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Light Treason News, hosted by Allison Kilkenny, interviews fascinating people and wild characters in this political comedy podcast. So tune in Thursdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network for pop culture.
Sacha Baron Cohen dresses up as different characters and interviews people, and sometimes they're just like average Americans, and sometimes they're really, really famous politicians and personalities.
Politics.
But we know this song and dance, right? It was called Triangulation during the Clinton years.
Yeah, and it was how we ended up destroying a bunch of the social safety net.
And a sprinkling of treason.
Light Treason News on the Progressive Radio Network.
Yeah, I'm not known as a gadget guy, but I love gadgets that really do the trick, like the new app. The Progressive Radio Network has an app, thanks to our friends at Audio Now. Hey, this is Mark Farrell, host of Insight on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we broadcast live out of New York City. But if you can't catch the show live, no frets. It's always archived. It's always on the app. Download it now, listen later, whenever you want. The Progressive Radio Network app is available from our friends at Audio Now. Check it out.
It's the BRONX. You know what's next.
It's a bowl of soul.
Sweetest song ever.
Tune in and get your dose of classic soul and independent R&B music from the United States and abroad on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A Bowl of Soul is a music experience you won't forget or regret. Check out A Bowl of Soul on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Mitchell Cohen, editor and contributor to the book, The Fight Against Monsanto's Roundup, The Politics of Pesticides, and Robin Falk-Esser, who is a contributor to this book as well. So right before the break, we touched on the Green New Deal, which is a great piece of legislation, but there's really some big gaps in there that those of us in the know who know about the toxicity in pesticides and genetically modified crops are concerned because that's not being addressed in the Green New Deal. Mitch or Robin, whichever one feels ready to take this on, can you talk to us a little bit why this is a significant oversight and how are pesticides and GM crops intimately connected with agribusiness and through association, the fossil fuel industry, big pharma, and the military-industrial complex, and ultimately climate change?
Well, how about if I start and then Robin could pick up on it, I guess.
Okay.
I was shocked to learn that Hillary Clinton was a main spokesperson for genetically engineered crops in agriculture. And she traveled all over the world as Secretary of State, as well as a business representative, promoting GMOs and giving advice, so-called advice, to all these companies on how to frame it, and countries, how to frame it so that it wouldn't get people scared about it. And she was paid a fortune for her talks about that everywhere in the world. So to take off on the government and the connection to why they're allowing this to happen, it's partly because all these people who have an image of perhaps being a little bit less fascist than some of the other folks are actually doing that same job, but under a different name, a different heading. So I'll leave that to Robin to go from there, because, well, go ahead, Robin.
Robin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
The connection with pesticides and GMOs, I guess, is best explained by the fact.
What happened?
I can't hear a thing that Robin's saying.
Okay, so we'll wait for Robin to come back to answer that question about the Green New Deal. But, Mitch, maybe we can go on and maybe you can talk about how foreign policy is linked to the profits of agribusiness. And what effect
that's happening
on people in the global south, especially.
Well, yeah. So there are only several countries, seven in the entire world, that have banned planting of genetically modified seeds, as well as the importing. So both the planting and the importing of crops. And they're some of the U.S.'s biggest targets right now. So one of those countries is Venezuela. Surprisingly, who would have known that Venezuela has banned the planting, and they've done it for many years now. And suddenly we find Venezuela in the crosshairs of the U.S. foreign policy. So that's one of the reasons, not the only one for sure. The oil is a huge part of it too that Venezuela controls. But that's part of why U.S. is hostile in the way it is towards Venezuela. The same thing after other wars that the U.S. has been involved in. So after Iraq, there was Paul Bremer, who was sort of the viceroy of Iraq, issued an executive order mandating that farmers not be able to replant seeds from genetically engineered seeds that they had purchased or were given. So the U.S. uses all these like CARE-type packages, aid packages, filled with genetically engineered seeds and crops, and then when people plant them, and then they save them to use for the next year, as farmers have always done, they're not allowed. And then Monsanto or the other corporations move in with the backing of the U.S. government to prevent the planting.
Hi, I'm back
seeds.
On. So I couldn't hear Mitchell, unfortunately, because the system is not working properly. But I'm here again. Somehow my phone got disconnected.
Good. Well, welcome back. Right before we lost you, you were going to tell us about the significant oversight of pesticides and GMOs not being addressed in the Green New Deal. Maybe you can go back to that.
Okay, so I didn't hear what Mitchell said with respect to that, so I may repeat what he said, but Monsanto has patented seeds, and the other companies too, like Syngenta and DuPont, have patented the seeds. And so people in the global south, farmers, are forced to buy Monsanto's patented seeds. It is a way for the corporations to take over the land and the economies and agriculture of the global south. It is providing a new resource to keep capitalism going. And So it's not just a simple thing like the pesticides are in our food and it's dangerous for us. It's destroying the local economies around the world, and it's forcing these farmers, local indigenous farmers, to be moved out into the cities or to work as indentured servants, like laborers on their own land. They're in debt to Monsanto. So this is the connection between genetically modified food, genetic engineering, and the pesticide industry. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
yes,
it's all tied in with the chemical industry and the military, because the U.S. foreign policy goals are intimately connected with capitalism, with procuring foreign markets and bringing the riches back to us. So it's all connected together. And that's why it's got to be in the Green New Deal. We're never going to succeed with fighting climate change and making green new jobs and changing the whole industry around from the use of fossil fuels to alternative energy if we don't also stop big agribusiness, because they're totally tied together. For example, agribusiness uses much more fossil fuels than organic farming would use. And the U.S. military releases more greenhouse gases than 140 countries combined together. That's from an article in Newsweek magazine. So it's all hooked up.
Mm-hmm. And where are their greenhouse gases coming from when you say the
U.S.
military?
From the use of fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
To keep their operation going. Their operation is very big. They're also the biggest polluters of, you know, mining also in the world.
Uh-huh. And how is Big Pharma also intertwined in this?
Okay,
I know they have their hands in it, too.
That's an interesting angle. And, you know, Big Pharma, it's like the idea that the people who are giving us cancer are also selling us the medicine to cure the cancer, that kind of idea. So the pharmaceutical houses are making money off of the illnesses that are generated by polluting and by for example, climate change.
Mm-hmm. It's a perfect business plan, right? Sell the stuff that causes the cancer and then sell the stuff that fixes the cancer, although it doesn't really fix it.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I always tell people, follow the money, and you're going to find, you know, you're going to get to the bottom of it. But it's really hard. They don't make it easy.
No.
So what other global environmental issues are not addressed in the Green New Deal? Do they address deforestation?
Can
you hear this?
I guess I was going to say that I just got this information talking about following the money, that Bayer Monsanto just lost in Missouri another $265 million judgment against them just 2 days ago in the trial against dicamba, which is the next product coming online as glyphosate and Roundup gets defeated all around the world. So now there's dicamba they replaced it with, and now people are fighting against dicamba, just like they used to fight against arsenic, and before that, DDT. So we have the question that I try to raise in the book is, can we win if we fight only, which we're on a treadmill fighting one pesticide at a time after the next, and we need to take a more systemic approach to what we're fighting about. Now, could you repeat your question that you just asked me, because I only heard part of it.
I was asking if the Green New Deal addresses deforestation in relation to climate change as well.
Not that I've seen. I might have missed it. I read through it several times, but then there are many different versions of it, and there are talking points and so on. So I'm not sure if it does. But the use of the herbicide, we were talking before the break, of Agent Orange, which is used as a major herbicide to wipe out the forests in Vietnam and in Colombia, the country of Colombia, I want to add, because that's happening right now. And they're wiping out these huge swaths of forest, and also Brazil, which are major oxygen producing areas of the world, and they're being wiped out by the herbicides. Roundup and other herbicides are being sprayed all over them in Colombia for the benefit of Coca-Cola, which is as well as the murder of a lot of indigenous organizers there. And, and so this is the tying together of all these different facets is like critical to for us, for our movements to address, so that when we talk about social environmental questions, we also talk about social justice questions. So what's happening with the people who are being murdered, who are fighting against all this stuff, or union organizing against Coca-Cola, for instance? If people want more information on the to get to St. Louis stuff, which is where Monsanto is headquartered, now it's owned by Bayer as well, so it's between Germany and in St. Louis, there's the Facebook page, the March Against Monsanto St. Louis Facebook page, and you could, and that's called just MAM St. Louis, and they have loads of information on there. And also there's the U.S. Right to Know organization, which exposed the Monsanto papers and is following the trials that are going on. And there's just a lot of things that are
coming. Yeah, I had Stacey Malkin from U.S. Right to Know on my show a couple of weeks ago.
She didn't mention
that. Great, this great resource. And we are just about out of time. So I want you to just have a chance, Mitchell, to share your book and where people can find it and get it. And if they have any questions for you, I don't know, Mitchell and Robin, if you want to share your emails or...
Oh, sure. I thought we would take questions live.
We're out of time. So
my email address is my name, Mitchell Cohen, MITCHEL1LCOHEN, at mindspring.com. And you could go to www.thepoliticsofpesticides.com, and you can get all the information there, including what Eve Ensler says, this may be one of the most important books you'll read this year.
Great. And Robin, quickly, you want to share your email?
Sure. It's robinesser1 at comcast.net.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to have correspondence.
Wonderful. And thank you for joining us. And everyone out there, thank you so much for joining us. We are out of time, but I will see you all again next week. And I will post all of this information on my website at ieatgreen.com. Have a great rest of the week, and see you again next week.